stigma is, of course, there, but it's also, you know, just the way we've been brought up, it's also a cultural hardwiring. So even in our generation, this is not going to be an obvious choice for their parents. It's going to be the last choice because there was no other option. So if it's our responsibility, A, either we should be equipped, or the community, the government, the society needs to be equipped to do that so that you can seek support to care for your parent in you while they are still with you or in their own homes.
Welcome to the Dementia Research Project, where I, Matt DeRay, explore the history, innovation and champions in and around the world of dementia. Epoch Elder Care was founded in 2012 to meet the growing needs for elderly care and services in India. Today's guest is Neha Sinha, its CEO and co-founder, who will walk us through her journey in the dementia care space. All right. Thanks, Neha, for joining. Really, really excited about this conversation we're about to have. For those who may not know about you, do you mind sharing a bit more, a bit of background?
Sure. So hi, Matthew. Firstly, thanks for having me here. Super excited as well and very, very glad and heartening to see such conversations happening more and more. So thank you for picking up this topic, first of all. So about me, Matthew, I'm by background, I'm a clinical psychologist. I've specialized in dementia and palliative care. And I've been working in the elder care space for more than a decade now. And I co-founded Epoch about, 10 years ago with a very clear idea about doing something in the space, improving quality of life. We'll talk about it more later. But yeah, that's me.
Fantastic. If you don't mind, like, walking me down memory lane right at the start of your career, Neha, what attracted you to the care space, right? Because out of all the options, which I'm sure were on your plate, what made you think, the care space?
I mean, looking back, it was not really a conscious choice that I made when I moved into elder care, honestly. So like I said, I did my psychology, clinical psychology was in the mental health space and actually was, working in a rehab center for schizophrenics and was doing that for, just about two and a half years. But that kind of burned me out because it's very difficult to work with chronic mental health, people. And, no matter what you do, there's very little change that you can actually bring about in their condition, sadly. So for someone as young as 22, 23, it is very, kind of demotivating sometimes. So I was just looking for a change, looking to do something lighter, quote unquote. That's when I met Kabir, who's the founder. And we was just discussing, he had come up with one of the things that he wanted to do was work in this space, do something for elders. So I have been brought up by my grandparents. My mom is a single mom. So, I've spent a lot of time, they were my parents, my mom's parents, really. So the idea of working with elders seemed very, kind of light and, and something which would definitely not burn me out, because that was the lens that at that time that I was looking for. So I thought, oh, this is going to be fun. I'm anyways like spending time with elders because I used to spend time with their friends and so on. So that's how this journey started. And little did I know that this is such a, such a serious space to be in. So we actually started off by providing a service called intellectual companionship. Because when you think about elders, especially, in Asia, you think that, they have everything, but they're lonely. I think it's a global phenomenon. You think that they don't have too much people spending time with them. And that's really the one thing that we wanted to solve. And we thought that, okay, somebody like us can go and spend time with them, be in their homes. And, in India, you can get a lot of help, resources, you can get domestic help and so on. But what we wanted to solve was somebody like Kabir and Neha spending time with them in their homes and providing intellectual stimulation. So the journey actually started off like that, where we would go spend time in their homes, play games, take them out, things like that. But as we started doing that, we ended up working with about 200-300 elders, probably more than that across three cities. But when we did that, we realized that there is so much more to, what meets the eye. When it comes to chronic conditions, and which are, very prevalent in India, given our lifestyle, there needs to be specialized care. And it's not that, general healthcare provider can really understand, or a general caregiver can really provide the care that an elder needs. And to top it all, more than 50% of our elders, I realized that point of time, had dementia. I mean, even at that time, I wasn't trained in dementia care, but I understood that this is something which definitely needs trained help, you know, specialized and focused care plans, the kind of activities you do with them and so on. So that was one of the insights we had, and which is why we switched completely from going to a very light companionship model to something as serious as what we do, as serious and clinical as what we do. And the whole idea was about two things: that we create an impact, and second is we solve the problem for elders. And when I say solve the problem, it means that when we care for an elder with dementia, we solve the problem 360 degrees, and which is why today we do residential care and not just something which would require us to seek help from others. So that's really how we got into this very, very specialized space.
Wow, it's really fascinating about that pivot from starting as a companionship-based solution, moving over. I suppose there are a lot of learnings from that first experience which you're bringing towards this, right?
Right.
One thing I love about when I read through EPOC, the name of your houses, your homes, Frida, Vermeer, Monet, which I guess speaks a lot to the intention, right? I mean, with which you, I guess, design your care programs, facilities. Maybe you can speak a bit about that.
Yeah, we've recently added two more. So we have Picasso, and you're just having Gustav, which is launching as well, you know, in the next couple of weeks, in fact. So, yeah, I think an important aspect of designing these care homes, and when we say designing care homes, is also to do with designing the infrastructure as much as designing the care plans of the elders who are there. And there are two aspects to it, you know, hard and soft. One is person centricity, and this is, you know, it's a word which is synonymous with healthcare. Right? That, you know, it needs to be person-centric. And what it really means is that the services that you do provide, even if it is at scale, really solves individual problems. So one is the elder has a say in their care plan, and the care is customized to the elder's requirements. And, you know, it's very difficult to do that, because when you're doing things at scale and when you have, you know, let's say 50 elders under the house, there has to be some standardization that obviously as a service provider, you need to do. And that's honestly been the learning curve for us at EPOC, because when we defined our mission, we were very clear that, you know, it needs to be, the care needs to be holistic, which means that we are not focusing on just medical care. And we are not looking at dementia with a neurological lens, you know, or a clinical lens only, but we are, you know, providing care which focuses on all the elements. And we have 7 elements of care. That's how we define our care plan. So, you know, whether it's cognitive, it's mental, physical, social, you know, spiritual, you know, things like that. So it needs to be holistic. It needs to be person-centric, and it needs to, you know, make an impact on quality of life. And in elders who are especially older elders, you know, who are 85 and above, very important aspect is to maintain or improve their quality of life, because you may not rehabilitate a condition, you may not have improvement in a condition, you may not make progress clinically in a condition, but what you need to do is, no matter what their condition is or how serious, you know, their medical diagnosis is, you are focusing on making them as comfortable, as happy, and, you know, really improving the whatever time they have over here. So that's the focus of the designing, I would say, in our homes.
Right. I read there's a initiative where you actually go into the homes of would-be residents and you try to mimic, at least to the best of your ability, the design, right? I found that fascinating, because I think I know people who are elderly who have moved to care homes. This feeling of being thrown into a new space can be very disorienting.
Right? Yeah, I think that holds true for any of us, right? We move into a hostel or, you know, when we move away from our homes, that's the feeling we get, right? So it's a very, 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 very natural feeling. And for elders who find it difficult to adjust to a change, it is more difficult. It is even more difficult for someone with dementia. And with dementia, what happens is that, you know, apart from all the other cognitive decline that you have, one of the major things is the ability to learn new information. So, you know, if I wake up and I'm used to having my glass of water on my right and I suddenly put it on my left, it even takes us some time to reorient ourselves. But someone who has dementia finds it's next to impossible for them to learn it, because neurologically, the neural wiring gets affected and they are not able to learn this information. So similarly, when you take them out of their own homes, and it's a very difficult decision for families, right? And sometimes they don't even know that they are moving into a care home. So our jobs really is to ensure that, can we recreate their space physically? So one is that, which is what you're talking about. Yes, we try and visit their homes, see if their bedrooms or their spaces or their favorite things can be brought along. Can we have the same pictures? Can we bring their favorite mug? Can we bring their armchair with us so that the disruption in new learning is minimal? You know, we call out the fact that we are not institutional care providers in that sense. You don't have to fit into our schedule.
For this level of personalization and patient-centered care, like you mentioned, I suppose then it's your team and the culture that needs to be bulletproof, right? Because I like you mentioned, the scaling, the challenges around scaling this level of personalization. How do you think about your team culture and like bringing in people who are going to care for people, right? I'm sure that must be one of your main priorities.
Yeah, and that's a really tough one, Matthew, honestly. In fact, you know, a couple of days ago, I actually heard, you know, someone comment that, you know, your clients or customers, quote unquote, are happy, but are your investors as happy? And that really is because scale is a challenge and you cannot promise that you suddenly have the same quality of care for hundreds of elders overnight. It has to come in with a learning curve. I think we are at that in that space finally, but it took us a while. And yes, you're right. See, it all boils down to people, honestly. I mean, I can think of a zillion things, you know, sitting on my desk, but what really gets implemented is the last mile caregiver who is in the elder's room or in the bathroom, giving them the care or changing their clothes with the tenderness and, you know, kind of person centricity that you expect them to do. Like, they like their water this temperature, and do you really care about that, right? And you can't have a micromanagerial system put in place, right, that somebody's actually monitoring every single step. So yeah, it's to do with culture, and that's the real investment that has gone in into building EPOC. I personally feel very, very grateful, and gratitude is something which we practice a lot, especially for the care team and caregivers, which, and it is not just the caregivers and nurses, but everyone who works in homes, right? And so it's even the housekeeping staff, even the food and beverage team, even the security guard, you know, they're all not only trained, but we also pick them. We also interview or screen them with the aspect that, do you have that, you know, do you have that intent or not? And is this just a job for you? Like, you don't care that you're actually caring for people, or you're working in a, you know, like a tech space. So the interview and the human capital focuses on understanding and screening people. It is difficult. I'm not saying that we know how to do it completely, but we try. And once we have somebody on board and we see that we don't see this particular, you know, quality, or we don't have that vibe, then we, you know, kind of ask that person to leave or take a decision, however difficult it is. Because, you know, you are either a caregiver or not. I say this a lot. You can't make someone a caregiver. You can't train someone to become a caregiver. So either you have it in you to care for someone or you don't. And we have seen such heartening, you know, examples. At least I, you know, see them, and I feel motivated just by seeing this. So over the years, we have focused on caring for our people so they care for our elders. And we have one of the lowest attrition rates in the industry. You know, it's less than 5%. It's a very high burnout space, but that's what we've, you know, kind of focused on.
You mentioned investors just now, and I guess you are in a unenviable position where investors will always want more, right? Or the business is doing good, you should expand more locations, but you are trying to manage this culture, right? Which is sacrosanct. I guess, like, how do you do that? The capitalistic society we live in, are you managing different people, different motivations? Yeah, please. Teach me.
I think, no, in fact, I was going to say, you know, Matthew, if you know someone, please put them onto me and put me onto them, because I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I'm still learning. And it's a tightrope walk. It's a tightrope walk. And to be fair to our shareholders, investors, whoever puts in the capital, well, they have put in the capital for your dreams. So it's their right to expect what they expect. So, you know, nobody's wrong. But I guess that's my job, is to, you know, kind of manage expectations with our board, with our shareholders, with investors, future investors, make this a exciting space for capital to come in. I mean, what would you do if capital is not here? And I'm very grateful to Lumis Partners, who, you know, anchored us, you know, 2 years back, because they decided to put the money in the right space and didn't, you know, let us compromise on our values, on our mission and vision. And they've been a solid partner. And there are not too many people around who think that way. So, and you need to, I guess, be, to all entrepreneurs out there, I mean, you get to need to be very upfront when you're raising money, that this is not a space which is going to, you know, double, triple your money like overnight. It requires patient capital. It requires someone to believe in what you're doing and to share somewhat of the passion. I'm not saying that everyone has to be as passionate as you are, but there has to be a fraction of the belief that you have that, yes, one day, you know, this is going to be big because the need is so, you know, intense.
India, very much like Southeast Asia and Asia in general, like, there's still a bit of a stigma around sending your parents with Alzheimer's into care homes. Maybe compared to the West, there's a social community focus more than anything. How do you think about that, addressing that stigma, which is probably baked in over a lot of generations within Asia?
Right. You know, stigma is, of course, there, but it's also, you know, just the way we've been brought up. It's also a cultural hardwiring, right? So even if you're not like judging someone, you're not really going to, this is not going to be like a very, very natural decision. So even in our generation, you know, or the generation, you know, the upcoming generation, this is not going to be an obvious choice for their parents. It's going to be the last choice because there was no other option. It's never going to be the first option. And that's really the hardwiring that we have all, you know, kind of grown up with, that it's our responsibility. But you need to have the other aspect as well. If it's our responsibility, A, either we should be equipped, you know, our ecosystem should be equipped to care for our parents, or the community, the government, the society needs to be equipped to do that, so that your parent, you can seek support to care for your parent in you while they are still with you or in their own homes. You can't hold on to these expectations, or you can't hold on to these values, quote unquote, when the latter is not solved for. So you have to let go of something, because ultimately the sufferer is the elder. And I try and explain this to people, that it's much worse for your parent to be in your own home, but with very little attention to them, you're not able to give them any time. They're just, you know, kind of locked up in their, you know, cooped up, sorry, in their own room, very little socialization, because you know, you don't know how to, in dementia, it's very difficult to socialize with them beyond a point, because conversation gets affected. So you need to really understand how to include them in social conversations and events. And it's so important to do that, right? So it's a, you know, we're at a crossroads, and it's a dilemma that everyone goes through. All our family members who choose to have elders in care homes go through this. But really, there is no way out until we solve this problem at large.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, Nia. And when you mentioned just now around expanding, providing care and all that to different parts of the country, we have the same problem in Malaysia, right? A lot of care homes are centered in the cities, because in terms of affordability, I think, at least from what I understand, the economics in these rural areas may not make sense, right? if we were to think about this 10 years down the line, right? Like, what change is necessary before everybody can have access to this type of care home within reason? Yeah.
So the market will evolve to serve every type of customer, honestly, and that's really going to be that way. It's a question function of demand. So do you have enough demand across all segments of people, of all segments of, you know, paying people? So I think in India today, honestly, you have all options, whatever little options we have. And from when we started a decade ago till now, there are a lot of players who have come. And though the industry is fragmented, but, you know, there are quite a few, more than 100 players who have taken a plunge. And it's, again, a very, very positive and motivating sign to see so many people take this up as a, you know, career slash business opportunity. So the customer will define the market, and that's what eventually will happen. So you will have care homes at, you know, very affordable prices also. The other thing is, of course, India, such care homes in India are largely private. The ones where, you know, you would really want to send your parents to, there needs to be subsidies for private players so that it encourages people to come in, you know, like I said, put their money in the right space. So there has to be either subsidies or good public-private partnerships that come in, and we can, you know, both at the policy level as well as the commercial level, you know, a solution needs to be, you know, found out.
Got it. Taking a bit of a side turn, what can the media do better in terms of storytelling around elder care, dementia, matters like that?
I think that's an important one. So media and the role of youth, I would say. So I think one focused contribution or effort is to break the bias, right? Stop showing old age homes as that white building with no sunlight and, you know, elders being depressed and poor care. And, you know, it's really the worst decision that, you know, children can take. So we need to stop showing such those old age. I'm not saying those old age homes don't exist, but you also not showing the other care homes, which are really nice and bright, and elders are really happy being in them. And there are lots of them across the country. So we need to also show these examples where today elders, baby boomers, and the next generation are also actively wanting to move into these homes because they don't want to be dependent. They are financially independent themselves, and they don't want the dependency to be there on their children because, you know, the society has evolved. I mean, the joint family system has broken down. It is a smaller society, smaller family system. It's a nuclear family and so on. So one is that. The second is the judgment that a child goes through, and it gets reinforced, and you always see these ads, or, you know, you see these, you know, the storytelling happens, the narration happens in a way that the child is obviously not a good child, and obviously it's something like, you know, got married and, you know, priorities changed. So these are very, very, you know, one-sided views of society. And honestly, a lot of people ask me this question, that how involved really are families where, you know, whose parents are there in EPOC? You know, it would be difficult for you guys to get in touch with them and so on. Believe me, Matthew, we have the opposite problem. We have over-involved families, and rightfully so. It's nice that, you know, they want to know what happened every day, every hour sometimes. And we have to ensure that the nursing team is communicating, sometimes over-communicating what's happened with your parent, and, you know, the decisions are taken jointly, collaboratively, and it's not one-sided. So we have seen family members, you know, being very, very concerned, being very involved, showing up every day, sometimes spending the whole day. We have seen these, but then nobody else has. You know, we don't see these versions in media at all. And media is such an impressionable thing, especially for the young generation, that when they don't have any biases, it's important that they also start viewing this space and professional care providers as the right thing to do, rather than the fact that there are professional care providers because children were not able to do their job well.
Let me read you your quote. "The world views the elder's life in shades of gray and silver, but I believe in a palette full of colors." That's exactly a very nice summary of what you mentioned around each individual person and their families. And you're right, the media is not doing a good job telling the different nuances of these stories because it's not straightforward, right? It's colorful. It's not, like you rightly said, it's
absolutely
not all
and so many, like you said, it's very nuanced, and there are so many things, that so many dynamics, so many individual layers to such decision making, and you can't just say that this is right and wrong. You know, circumstances are different for everyone, and why will someone not have the right intent or the right feelings for their own parents? I mean, it's exceptions are always there, but then exceptions are there everywhere. You see, you know, bad parents for children as well, but nobody really paints parents, you know, picture that way, right? You always have, like, a mother is always expected to be like the giving person, and are there not mothers who have struggled? They have, right? So similarly, children go through their own struggles to care for, you know, especially the sandwich generation, right? When they have their own kids who are growing up and they have to care for elderly parents, it's a very, very difficult job, and the demanding jobs that we all have. And in India, you would know, I mean, you need to put in long hours of work. If you don't put in long hours of work, you're not doing well, you're not working hard enough. So the demands just go on increasing.
Hmm. No, which makes the role you play extremely, extremely pivotal, right? I'll end with one last question, Neha. What are you excited about yourself, for Epoch, for the industry?
I'm certainly very excited about the industry, Matthew, because this is really the sunrise industry. And given from how it all started for a couple of players like Epoch, where, you know, you had to actually explain to people why should there be professional services for elders, you know, because India is such a, you know, culturally we are supposed to do what we are supposed to do for elders in the society. So we'll never ever need such services. Really, people had these strong notions. To today, where we have, you know, so many players taking the plunge. So it's a very, very exciting space. You know, time to be taking this decision and being in this space. That's one. I think it's a very, very exciting career opportunity. That's the other thing that is important. And we as service providers, it's our duty to build these career paths, to make them exciting. You know, you should have, you know, young people opting for this, that, no, I have these five options, but I really want to work with elders. And how do you make it exciting? You know, you have to obviously commercially make it exciting for them. Number one, it needs to be a respected, you need to call it out as a profession. Again, the role of social media is very important over here, that, wow, I mean, you're working with elders, and it's not social work that you're doing necessarily. So it's not, you know, a non-government, an NGO, or, you know, it's not philanthropy, and you're not a spiritual person to be doing this, and so on. And again, you know, one of the statements or one of the notions that people have, and I clarify this, that, okay, you know, oh my God, you're doing something which is, you know, service above yourself, and you're really a very nice person, so on. I mean, of course, I mean, it doesn't mean that someone who is working in the corporate, you know, traditional field is not a nice person. So I think keeping that, you know, personal value aside, the fact is that to be a healthcare or an elder care provider, you are a professional. You're doing it with the right ethics. You're doing it with the right values. Because in elder care, ethics and values play a very, very important role to the question that you asked at the beginning. You know, how do you ensure that caregivers are doing the right thing? So, and these are professional values, and nurses, like the role of nurses in this field is so important and so not spoken about. Not doctors, but nurses. And because they are the ones who, you know, have the right kind of technical know-how, but at the same time, they are all trained to be caregivers. They are trained to, you know, when they are doing a procedure, they just don't do it on the person clinically, you know, surgically in that sense. They will always make the elder feel comfortable. They will know about the elder, say the right thing. So these are the things. It's not a question of does the nurse do it because the they are, you know, doing social work, quote unquote. Mm. No, they're doing it because they're trained, and that's the right way to be trained. That's the right way to be professional. So it's a space for the industry where, you know, you're going to see good capital come in. So that is one. And it's important that this space has good capital, because only then will people opt to build more services, to build more homes, to have career paths over here. It will generate the demand, and therefore, you know, demand will generate supply. So it's all interlinked, really. And once you start seeing that, okay, you know, in my social circle, if there are more than 50% people who have opted for professional services, then automatically that eases out the stigma.
Mm.
So these are the early shoots. We see, you know, these encouraging signs already, and conversations around opting professional services have become much more normal than what they used to be. People earlier used to come in with requests at Epoch and say that, you know, please, you know, don't click my parents' pictures, or don't mention their names, or don't, you know, confidentiality was a very big thing. I'm not saying it's not important. Of course, confidentiality should be there everywhere, but not from a standpoint that, oh my God, no one should ever know that my mom is here. So those things are changing. We see a lot of families coming forward and say, okay, you know, what can we do for you? How can we spread the word? And we tell them, oh, can we, you know, can you speak to this person, convince them, or can we record a small video? So those small things, conversations have become easier. So yeah, I think the next decade is definitely an exciting one for the elder care space.
Fantastic. I think it boils down to you're solving a very big problem in the market, and you're executing really, really well. So with that, thank you very much, Neha, for your time. How can the audience or listeners reach out to you if they want to learn more or collaborate or?
Yeah, sure. Firstly, thank you. It was really fun having this conversation with you, and very, very excited, you know, to have more such conversations with anyone, you know, wants to reach out. And we have the website, which is obviously, you know, we have information about all the work that we do there. Personally, you know, I'll leave my email ID where anyone can reach out. We also do, you know, online sessions with people where we can, you know, kind of counsel them, or also hold awareness sessions, you know, regarding early signs, how can you care for them in your own home, when is the right time to take decisions, and so on. So we do a bunch of work where we are very happy to, you know, kind of reach out and counsel people. So do leave my contact details for them.
Will do. We'll put in the podcast description. Thanks again, Neha.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you want more of these type of stories, interviews, and guests, please follow the Dementia Research Project wherever you get your podcasts. Onwards and upwards.